And if you're on a computer and you have the chat open, we can use the chat as well. So I'd like to welcome all of you to our one and only PE 102 conference call. And I normally host this from the traditional territory of the Kwanlin Dun First Nation and Ton Kwachin Council, but at the moment I'm in Greece, so on a different time zone. So that's where I'm coming to you from. So you may see some movement in the background at some point in time when it's bedtime for the two-year-old granddaughter, but hopefully it won't be too disruptive for you. So I'd like to, before we jump into this call, I'd like to thank everybody for being very accommodating. Normally we have two conference calls for every learning event. Hopefully you guys had a chance to watch the 15-minute video last week that I posted and join the call today. So we should have some good conversation today. So thank you very much. So I'd like to mention that as a recreation leader, or as a leader in recreation and sport, you might encounter situations where you were told about or suspect child or elder abuse or self-harm behaviors or things like that. And this learning event, we don't teach you what to do in these circumstances because each province and territory has different rules about the age of a child and the duty of professionals and community members to report abuse. So different communities and provinces and territories have resources for helping in these situations. So if you need to access some of that information, you can find some of it in the links in the Explore More section. And you can also always access the local RCMP or social services for more information. And the reason I sort of start with that at the beginning of the call is because this learning event is about the role that safe and supportive environments in quality, play in providing quality recreation experiences. And so the safety of our participants extends beyond the physical safety that we kind of talked about quite a bit in our M101 Manage Risk. And so when we start to recognize the personal and also the social factors that can underlie challenging behaviors that we observe, we might be more open to using strength-based approaches that foster sort of psychological safety and also lead to recreation being more inclusive for everybody. So I think you've probably gone through some of the slides and seen some of them in the beginning, and I'll just sort of touch on a few things. So what I'd like you to do is just let's do a quick round of introductions, just your name, and I'd like you to just in a few sentences, 5 to 10 seconds, describe a positive recreation experience that you've had or that you've seen. And I'll put this question in the chat. If you can't think of anything, that's totally okay. You can pass. Just mention your name and where you're coming in from as we go around our circle. You could also just describe what a positive recreation experience for somebody else looks like to you in a couple of words. So, Casey, if I can put you on the spot, and then we'll go to Quentin, Josh, Adam, Caden, Melanie, April, and Misha.
Okay, so one or two words for a positive recreation experience?
Yeah, one or two words, one or two sentences, just something that captures it.
Rewarding is the first word that's coming to mind. I don't have much time to think about it, but yeah, rewarding is definitely when a positive experience happens, when you feel like you've helped someone improve in some way. I would say it always makes you feel like it's like a rewarding sense or a sense of meaning. And my name is Casey. I'm sorry, I should do the introduction first. And I work for Elder Active as a program coordinator. I also help with hikes and the arts class.
That's great. And you're coming to us from Whitehorse, right?
Yes.
Thank you. So rewarding perhaps for yourself, but also for the participant as well?
Yes, ideally. I feel like when they come to me at the end of a class or something saying, oh, thank you so much for making this. This was really, you know, this was fun. This was creative. This was challenging but rewarding. Like all those kinds of feedback that they give me, if it's a positive feedback experience, it gives a sense of reward for me, but also I would hope for them as well.
That's great. Thank you for sharing that. So that's a, you know, a way to capture something in a word and explain it in a few sentences a little bit more. So thank you. Let's go to Quinton and then Josh. And if you guys are in environments that are too noisy and you're going to type, just wave at me or something or do this type of symbol. And I'll know that you're busy typing instead. So, Quinton, what are your thoughts? Do you have a couple of words after you introduce yourself to describe what a positive recreation experience might look like?
Yeah, so my name is Quinton, and I work for Manitoba Aboriginal Sports and Recreation Council here in Winnipeg, Manitoba. Just a couple words to describe it. I guess fun would be one that comes to mind. Obviously, whoever is participating in it, it needs to be fun for them, and not just for the players or the participants, but even for the one who's leading the instruction. Like, it's a more enjoyable experience when it's fun for you too. So, and then the second word that comes to mind is respectful or respect. It definitely is more fun for everyone involved when everyone is being respectful to each other. Participants and players are respectful towards each other and to the coaches. Coaches and instructors are respectful to the players, participants, and just everyone else involved, parents and stuff like that. So.
That's great. Thanks. And some of those words remind me of the words that sort of emerged through the last Canadian sport policy in about 2012. Fun was out there, right? And I think it still is. It's a really important thing to – it's not very positive if we're not having fun or enjoying ourselves. So thank you. Josh, would you like to jump in to introduce yourself and maybe use a couple of words to describe a positive recreation experience?
Hi, my name is Josh. I'm calling in from Winnipeg, and I also work for the Manitoba Aboriginal Sport and Recreation Council. A word that describes maybe a positive recreation experience is education. So whenever I'm leading a program and the kids are learning a new skill, or you can see they're improving and whatever we're trying to teach them, and they're excited and they're having fun that they're learning, I think that's always a really positive experience to be a part of.
That's great. It's sort of that learning and growth, and you see change happening. So thank you, Josh. Let's go to Adam, and then Caden, I see you're posting in the chat, and then Melanie, April, and Misha.
I'm Adam. Can you hear me okay? Yeah, I'm the Director of Professional Development for the NWT Recreation and Parks Association in Yellowknife. And I was fortunate as a kid throughout high school to, I guess it was 5 summers, I was a participant in an outdoor education program that included remote wilderness tripping, which certainly was challenging and an adventure. And I thought the program, I didn't necessarily realize this at the time, but did an excellent job of completing that experiential learning cycle of learning things about yourself, but also allowing you to translate that and apply that to the rest of your life. So there was a lot, it was a very formative experience, and a lot of transformational skills that were developed there. And then I went on to work there for many, many years afterwards too. So I got to see it from the other side as well and enjoy facilitating that for my students.
That's great. Thanks, Adam. And it's interesting the situations that you can put youth in, I guess, right? And when you're in those outdoor settings, right? You combine the risk and the challenge and the physical activity, and then there's a lot more growth that comes along with it. So thank you. Caden, I noticed you've popped. Do you say Tanshi? Is that right? Yeah? Okay. And social skills, yeah, definitely, right? So team activities, whether it's recreation, arts and crafts, sport, anything, there's social skills, building community, and also sometimes facing, I'm not sure if this is what you mean, but facing challenges or adversity together too, right? So, and overcoming some of those as well. So thank you and welcome. Let's go to Melanie and then April and then Misha. Melanie, does it work for you to unmute and share one or two words that describe a positive recreation experience?
I'm Melanie from Watson Lake, and one is what I think of, like I always think of like the physical and the mental health benefits and like the boost of confidence you probably can get through recreation, and then bonding with peers, you know, or with your community is part of recreation for me as well. Yeah.
That's great. Thank you. So not just sort of the physical pieces, but a lot more benefits to go along with that as well. Thank you. April, thanks, Melanie. April, does it work for you to unmute and use one or two words to describe a positive recreation experience?
Hi, I'm April from the Soktok Metro Territories, the recreation coordinator. Positive recreation experience is receiving a lot of compliments after you run a community event, and you get more confident in yourself once you receive like these compliments, and also feedback of how you could improve these events and actually doing the feedback that you receive.
That's great, and that's something that we sometimes forget, because in recreation it's sometimes easy to hear what people aren't happy about, but as you point out, April, it really builds our confidence. It makes us feel more positive about what we're doing and what we're doing for the community when we do get good feedback that either things are working or that we can improve upon them. So thank you. That's a really good reminder for all of us in recreation. Misha, how about yourself?
I think from like the perspective of like somebody who's participating as well as somebody who would program events, organized and safe are two words that I think further like ensure that positive experience, because I know for me when I go to something and everything's all over the place, or at least when I'm doing something and it's all over the place, I don't feel good about it, and it's definitely very apparent. So I definitely feel that like when things are like feeling safe and organized, it's a lot more fun to be a part of.
Yeah, and just to follow up on that, I think you know, safety is not just about physical safety, right? It's about feeling safe with the people around you, feeling safe that your skills perhaps aren't criticized, that you can learn new things in a safe way without people making fun of you or being ostracized or anything. So thank you, Misha. It's a good word to bring up. Well, thanks, everybody, and again, welcome. Positive program experiences, if you think of it that way, really do contribute to the benefits of recreation. So as you mentioned, these types of experiences are motivating for our participants and also for us. They're developmental. They give opportunities to learn and grow, and they help keep us healthy and active. Positive experiences create a sense of belonging, as you mentioned, encourage social responsibility. I imagine in Adam, in your outdoor program, that was a big one, like outdoor leadership skills. And these are outcomes that we strive for through the different recreation and sport programs that we're offering and running. I'm sure that you all know that at times challenging behaviors can make it difficult for our participants to have a positive experience, and a number of you have already shared some examples in the week one RLA. As a recreation leader, sometimes this can be frustrating, and sometimes it can be really challenging or difficult to be patient. So trying to keep an open mind and understand what's going on can be really helpful. And if you recall from the slides, the iceberg model, you might be seeing just the tip of the iceberg and not really know what's below the surface. And if you imagine an iceberg in your mind, and I'm not sharing the slides tonight just because my internet is not as great as normal, but there's a lot below the surface. And, you know, especially if the water is dark, we can't necessarily see what that is. So let's take a moment. We're going to go around our circle, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to jump two people ahead in the circle so that we don't always put a Casey on the spot. And this time we'll start with Josh, but I'll give you a moment, Josh, to read the question and for me to explain it. So what I'd like to ask you is, what is one factor that might affect behavior that we see in our participants? And I'll just pop that in the chat there. So just one factor, something that might, not what you see, which is the tip of the iceberg, right? Not the speaking out, the shouting, the yelling, the quietness in the corner. But what would underlie that? What might be affecting the behavior that you actually observe? And just one thing each so that we can give everyone a chance. So, Josh, any ideas?
Sometimes if the kid has a shy personality or they're doing a program with peers maybe that they don't want to mess up in front of, I find sometimes for my athletes that when certain athletes are around them that they maybe look up to or are friends with, they don't want to mess up. So that means they become more shy and don't really want to participate. So you have to be more encouraging and sort of, I don't know, be vigilant of that so we make sure they feel like they're, you know, in a safe space where it's okay to mess up and they don't have to worry about silly if they don't do something right the first time.
Yeah, I think we can probably all remember back to being, whether it was teenagers or younger, when we felt very uncomfortable or felt judged perhaps by our peers or something. So that's really important, I think, Josh. And do you think that most youth or children experience that at some point in time or another?
I would probably say yeah. It's interesting. It's more so the girls in my group that experience that. They're mostly the age of like 12, so most of the boys couldn't care less, but a lot of the girls, I think, for whatever reason, are more cognizant of what it means to like mess up and maybe look silly. So for them, it's, you have to be a bit more encouraging and let them know it's okay to not be perfect at anything the first time over.
Yeah, so that's probably the age at which girls start to get more socially conscious, right, and things. So that's great. Thank you for pointing out that factor. Let's go, Adam, and Caden stepped away for a moment, so we'll go Adam, Melanie, April. Adam, is there a factor that you think that can sometimes affect some of the behavior that we might observe?
There are so many to draw from. Anything in the child's background, their history, that what's happened leading up to their arrival there. But one kind of on a different path that just occurred to me, I struggle with this with my own kids sometimes, is the difference between expectation and reality, where they may have a very vivid idea in their head of what a program is going to be like. And when the reality differs substantially from that, the adjustment can be quite difficult, and it can result in a number of different behaviors that can be a bit challenging for a facilitator.
So when you say expectation, like they might think they get to do something, but really there's a lot of legwork behind it or something, like, is that what you mean?
Yeah. For example, like going to an archery session where they may be thinking Robin Hood in their head, and they're not prepared for the 30 minutes of buildup before they get to let one arrow fly. And so that they have a real struggle slowing down, paying attention, and doing what's needed to be done before they can actually start shooting, because they thought they were coming in and just going to be running around firing arrows at who knows what. Like, it's very much dependent on their imagination, but I think that adjustment and slowing the pace down to the reality is a challenge sometimes.
Yeah, and that's actually a good thing for us as recreation programmers to remember, recreation leaders, right, or sport leaders, to remember that kids might not have the same expectation of what's going to happen as what we're planning. So thank you. Thanks for that. Let's see, we'll go to Melanie, then April, then Nisha. Melanie, is there one factor that you think that might affect some of the behavior we get in our programs?
There are so many factors that come to my mind as well. It's, I think any sort of conflict and distress, may that be at home, at work, with peers, then there's like hormones due to puberty. But then also I think of immigration and maybe having language barriers or just a different cultural perspective in doing certain things and feeling maybe not super comfortable in the setting. So this could also be part of it.
That's great. So a few different things that you mentioned there. Mm-hmm. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, in addition to all the other things that have been named already.
So language, culture, sort of what kids' expectations from home or the norms of behavior from home that they bring with them. Thank you. Mm-hmm. April, is there anything for yourself? Oh, you've popped it in there. So culture and different beliefs, right? So when you come together, another person may think of something, but somebody might do it differently. So I think, there's also different ways of raising children in different cultures. So different cultures might raise children differently. Some cultures let them perhaps explore more, and other parents might sort of bubble wrap their kids, and that could affect things as well. April, if you have an example of what might be different or what you're thinking of, that would be great, and you could pop that in the chat then. Misha, how about yourself? Do you have an example or a factor other than what's been already mentioned that you think might affect behavior?
Yeah, I would say maybe a disability of some kind, whether it's like a learning one. Personally speaking, as somebody who is autistic, there have been programs that I've gone to where, so for example, there was this party boat that they had, and as soon as they turned on the music, it was going to be a big party and it was going to be so fun. And I had a total meltdown because the music was way too loud and I wasn't expecting that. So I think, definitely when there are like learning disabilities or different types of disabilities included, we have to think about that as well. How programs impact people.
Thank you. And Acacia, how about yourself? I mean, you're working with a different population, working with elders and seniors. Are there any factors that you've run into that are different than those that have been mentioned that might affect behavior?
All right, just trying to unmute. I would say that there's sometimes, I mean, depending on the age group and depending on the things that they're in particular dealing with, but I've dealt with some folks that have challenging things regarding just the processes of aging, right? Like they might have some memory issues or Alzheimer's or slight difficulty regulating their emotions compared to younger people. But I wouldn't say that's a super frequent thing. It's just a here and there. I've noticed a couple of things with a couple incidents with people who are on the older end of our age spectrum.
Yeah, that's really interesting, too, because that's not something that those of us who are working with children or youth might think about. So thank you for sharing. And coming around to the end of the circle, Quentin, is there anything that you find that hasn't been mentioned that is a factor that maybe affects the behaviors that you see in the programs you run?
Yeah, actually, oddly enough, and I had to think about this through the duration of everyone talking, but I had a conversation with a parent yesterday about her player who ended up not continuing the season at some point. One of the things that she mentioned is she wished that her player had more passion for the sport. And, as a result, I see some of the kids who are really into hockey, for example, and passionate about the sport. So they want to be at practice. They want to play games, want to be on the ice. They want to play. So not only do they usually do really well with the drills and stuff like that, and they develop really well, but they also respect the coaches, and they behave well, because one of the things usually that happens if someone's not behaving is they might lose a shift, they might lose some ice time or something like that. So kids who are really passionate about the sport, they seem to really behave well for the most part, and the ones who don't kind of don't, maybe they don't care if they lose ice time, or maybe they don't care if they need more practice. So that was one thing that came to mind.
So I wonder if that passion, like I'm sort of thinking back as a parent that, sometimes we try and encourage our kids to take part in sports that we want them to take part in, and it's not really their passion. I wonder if there's any role in parental pressure behind that or not, too. So, and for those of you who run programs with children and youth, especially something that might happen after school, what is another common factor that you might run into? See if you can pop it in the chat. That definitely affects behavior. Let's see who gets it in the chat first. The single word I'm thinking about. And for those of you that it's lunchtime, you might know what that word is. I don't think my chat's popping up. It's not, my internet must be going. Does somebody want to unmute and tell me what the word is that I'm thinking of? Hunger, yes. Thank you. So, I mean, we've talked about a number of different factors. Hunger is a big one, and often, as all of you probably do, including healthy snacks with the programs is a big bonus. You know, kids don't always have access to healthy foods, healthy snacks at home, so it's important to bring that in to our recreation settings because that's definitely something that we can do. And some of you talked about things that like home life and home support. There can be, you know, learning disabilities, the cultural differences, and April just pointed out language, words being pronounced differently in different families but having the same meaning. So definitely, like, and that's in one language with different pronunciations and different meanings. So you can imagine when somebody, maybe English isn't their first language or they speak a different dialect of a indigenous language or things like that. So language as well. We have to remember that as recreation leaders, we're not counselors. So we really can't change what's going on for other people. So I had a big conversation about somebody actually who was a child psychologist about this, and it sort of triggered for me what's really important. And what he said is, you're not ever going to change what's going on for the other person. What you change is yourself. And so you might have noticed week one of this learning event is about changing your own awareness and your own empathy, and then coming up with strategies and actions where that you can do differently. You know, I was raised with, if you don't behave properly, you sit out, but then kids feel not included and then they tend to not come. And maybe the kids who are misbehaving and are told to sit out are the ones that really need to be there in your program so that they learn those social skills. So I think as recreation leaders, it's really important with thinking, what can we do differently? Not what can we change outside of that, but what can we change in ourselves? So let's flip this conversation around for a moment, and this time in our circle, that puts us with Caden first, but I'm not sure if he's back yet, so Melanie will be first in this circle with this question. And let's look at what actually makes a positive recreation experience. So you could think about a time when you had a positive recreation experience, or you can think about the one that you just, the words you used at the beginning to describe. And what was the factor? What was one thing? You don't have to tell me five or anything, just one. What was one thing that helped make that experience positive? So Melanie, if you can either think for yourself or of kids in your programs, what would be one factor? And obviously providing healthy snacks, that's an example of one thing. So what else helps make experiences, recreation and sport experiences positive?
Compassion pops to my mind.
Compassion, yeah. For sure, like that. Yeah, and that ability to just try and understand from somebody else's perspective. Thanks, Melanie. April, how about yourself? I'm not sure if it works for you to unmute and share, or if you'd prefer to pop in the chat. But what is one factor that can help make a recreation or sport experience positive? Okay, April's going to pass, so that means we're on to Misha and then Acacia, Quentin, Josh. Thanks, April. Misha, how about for yourself? What's a factor that could help make a positive recreation experience?
Maybe if it's possible to get to know the audience that are going to be there, so you can, you know, prepare for whatever, I don't know, I'm trying to think of like an example of like maybe there's an individual that has, you know, a different way of doing things or has some different barriers that maybe other people don't have, or just to be more accommodating in your programming.
Yeah, and sometimes it's hard to be if you don't understand that background, right? So I think that that's really important. So thank you for sharing that. Casey, how about yourself? Like from your perspective, working with elders and seniors, what's a factor that could make experiences more positive?
I would say that taking the time to really listen to the people who come in or your participants in your program, and trying to relate to them, even though I'm not usually close in age to them, I can try to use empathy to put myself in their shoes, or like, you know, they'd be like, oh, it's really difficult to find housing. I'm like, you know, I mean, I'm definitely not an elder, but I understand what that's like. And things like people with certain disabilities might have chronic pain. I'm like, I can relate to them to that thing. So I try to use things in my own life that is a direct tie to what they're doing, within reason. Like, I don't want to be like, oh, I want to make it about me, but if I can use an example from my own life where I can be like, listen, I do fully understand what that might feel like, and try to use that in both the programming and when I talk to them, I think it really helps gain better relationships with the members that I work with on a daily basis.
That's great. Thank you very much for sharing that. So that sort of familiarity with people and thank you. Okay, let's go to Quinton, Josh, Adam, and Caden's back. So we'll jump Caden in at the end there after Adam. So Quinton, any thoughts about a factor that can help make recreation or sport experiences positive?
One thing that really helped with me playing sports growing up was inclusivity. I was always a very shy kid, so it was kind of hard for me to open up to people, coaches or just if I didn't really know them too well. And I had this one gym that I went to for hockey training, and the guy who owned it, who also ran all the sessions, he was very personable right off the bat and inclusive. So I think as a coach, I try to always get everyone involved. I try to talk to everybody at every practice. I say hi to everybody. I try to talk to all the parents. I try not to like leave anyone out. So I think inclusivity really helps.
Yeah, and it's a pretty important word for what we do in sport and recreation. So thank you for sharing that. Josh and then Adam, any thoughts about that haven't been mentioned? I know as we come around the circle, it gets harder. But any factors that can help make experience positive?
Yeah, I think always having like enough or good quality instructors just to lead a program is always going to be helpful and make the experience more positive, whether it be the knowledge and experience that they have, or just making sure all the children are properly cared for, tended to, and are being led correctly through the program.
That's great. Thank you. And Adam, any thoughts about anything else to add to that?
A lot of great answers already. One thing that comes to mind for me is, along with ensuring a positive experience, the word effective experience as well. And that implies that there's got to be a purpose to what we're doing. So I think having program facilitators, leaders, managers, coordinators that have a shared and clear understanding of what we're trying to accomplish with a program. So if we're looking at recreational hockey, it's not about learning to take a good wrist shot. That's very secondary to the outcomes, at least in my mind. So making sure that we understand what is it that we're really getting at, that we want the kids to get from this, what makes it positive for them, allows us to focus our efforts.
Thank you, Adam. And Caden, I think you joined us back early enough to get the gist of the conversation. We were just talking about factors that help make experiences positive, and I don't know, I see you liked what Quinton said, but I don't know if you have anything that you'd like to add to wrap up this round of our circle. Thumbs up? Okay. Yeah. So I think a lot of what you guys have described can be captured by that word, like inclusion, right, or inclusivity. And I think that that's really key to a positive experience and recognizing that what's important for one person might be done a little differently for another. So some people might want a bigger welcome, other people might want more of a quiet welcome as they come. And team building activities and time spent off the, you know, outside of what you're doing. You know, even just I try and jump on the call early enough just to chat to whoever kind of makes it, you know, beforehand, things like that. So trying to make everybody feel welcome. So if we think about it, then positive recreation experiences are critical, because without them, we're not going to reach those benefits that you talked about at the very beginning of the call. And then we have to think about, well, we are going to have challenges, and what can we do about it? So we can choose to react to the problem, or we can choose to support the person. And awareness and empathy, as shown on slide 21, can help us tackle challenging situations by shifting our mindset from a problem-solving approach to something called a strengths-based approach that, you know, many of you have probably already heard about, but it's something that we use in community development as well as working with people. A strengths-based approach is really designed to bring out the best in others. And not only does it help us as leaders and coaches, but it benefits all of the participants. It can help build character, skills, and values, and it stresses cooperation and collaboration. Again, similar to many of the things you explained at the beginning of the call. I do find, though, that, you know, although things are shifting to more of a strengths-based sort of mindset, we still have this sort of problem-focused mindset in some of the things we do. It's like, you know, you didn't do this right, or you didn't get a high enough mark for this, or you didn't make the team because of this. And I think that problem-centered approach that, if you've looked at the slides, is described on slide 22, it kind of anticipates bad things happening or the worst, and it concentrates our on individuals at risk or in trouble, and it reacts to problems after they happen and stresses competition that might lead to more problems. Personally, I think that our healthcare system is a good example of a problem-centered approach, because less than 2% of our entire budget is spent on prevention, which would be a strengths-based approach. And prevention is something, so if we can sort of take this approach that we want to work on things in a certain way before they happen, then I think that we're going to have a greater influence on having positive recreation and sport experiences for everyone. I think, though, that because of the way society is, it takes an effort for those of us in these roles to practice a strengths-based approach. At least for me, who's a bit older, it's not something I necessarily grew up with. And sometimes it's hard to shift my thinking and shift what's going on. And, you know, we just want to fix what's not working, and rather than looking at ways to support growth from an individual or a group perspective. So if you think about another way of thinking about it is thinking about the glass being half full rather than half empty. And so if we think about a glass as being half full, we're looking at it as more of a strengths-based approach, and we can really believe in the ability of people, whether they're children or elders, to change. And then it's much easier for us to act in a way that's consistent with that positive strengths-based approach. So I think now that we've explored some of our beliefs around what positive recreation experiences can do, what they look like, what's underlying some of that challenging behavior, I wanted us to consider, just as we wrap up the call, some of the actions and strategies that can demonstrate or show a strengths-based approach. And if you happen to have the slides open, slide 24 lists some actions and slide 25 lists some strategies. Personally, I see actions as being a little simpler, like a smaller scale thing, whereas a strategy might consist of a number of actions. And sometimes it requires us to do a little bit of learning or training to actually implement or be act in a new way. So let's keep it pretty simple and start with some actions. And let's see who started the last round. Melanie did. So Misha, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Once I post the question in the chat, I just got to scroll down and find it. What are some strengths-based actions that you can or do use to help make recreation experiences positive? And if you're kind of stuck, what I'll do is I'll open the slides and talk through a couple of those with you. But if something comes to mind, and just let me know. And you might have already mentioned some of these. You guys mentioned, you know, like making people feel welcome and things. Those are definitely strengths-based actions. But if there's something else that comes to mind, if not, you can pass.
I just had like a quick look at maybe some ideas from the slide. I'm actually thinking maybe like a check-in to see what kinds of skills people wanted to build, and like maybe there's like some kind of like being like, oh, you're really, really like good at this, and you know, asking them some of the skills that they'd like to build and like supporting them in that maybe.
Yeah, so especially might be easier in recreation, like in a arts and crafts program or things like that, than in a specific sport program, right, where you're training for a sport and there's certain skills that go along with it. But, yeah, so like giving them options and choices and letting them take the lead rather than you always sort of saying what's going to happen. Is that what you mean? Yeah? Okay, great. Thanks. Okay, Acacia, how about yourself? Are there any actions or things that you like to do that really are supportive and come from more of a strengths-based approach?
Sorry, was this for me? It cut out the main part.
Okay, so were there any sort of other things other than what you've already mentioned that you feel are really supportive and bring out the best in people? So sort of take the glass from being half full to full.
I'm going to pass on this and think on it.
Okay, sounds good. Misha's got shift the power and control for sure. Like, so don't always be as a leader. Let's not be the ones always in. Obviously, with kids, you have to have some sort of control, right? But, you know, it's not about always having that power, right? So thank you. Quentin, how about yourself? Let's go Quentin, Josh, and then Adam. Is there anything specific that you like to do that really supports bringing out the best in the group and contributes to positive experiences?
Like just looking at the slides, like there's a couple that I do, like the boundaries and guidelines for behavior. Then the demonstrating mutual respect kind of reminds me of just leading by example. Like if I'm the head coach of a team, then I need to be the one who leads by example with how I talk to the players and how I talk to the refs or whoever it is, coaches, parents, and stuff like that. So I try to lead by example so that the kids hopefully kind of follow suit. I've had many coaches sort of lead in a way that they maybe shouldn't have, and it really influences the kids a lot and how they behave.
Yeah, so leading by example, being a role model, and perhaps if there's other adults supporting as well, expecting the same from them too. Thanks, Quentin. Josh, how about yourself? Anything that comes to mind for yourself about what you do to support some actions that are sort of build the strengths and build a positive environment?
Yeah, something I like to do is just always have, like, positive affirmations for the kids. You know, try not to focus too much on the negatives and focus on what they're doing right. So even if a kid, you know, he's trying to do a drill and he's really struggling with it, you can say, like, you know, great job for trying. Like, it's a really good effort. Like, doing amazing, trying something new, things like that to always help them be more positive and make them feel like they're doing a good job.
Yeah, so that they can sort of see those small steps towards success, I guess, right? So you're building the little pieces and you're reinforcing those little pieces to help them get to those bigger changes, I guess. Thank you. Adam, any thoughts from yourself about, and again, the slide that we're sort of focusing on, as Quentin pointed out, is slide 24. Anything that comes to mind?
Yeah, I like to allow for differentiated participation, to just leave room for, if we've got an activity going on, that there's more than one way that a kid might want to participate in that activity, and giving them the genuine choice. Classic one is, you know, pursuit games. Some kids are quite uncomfortable or anxious with pursuit games. Something like British Bulldog, they might be very comfortable being one of the kids in the middle to start, but they don't want to be running or skating from one end to the other. And small things like that, just allowing kids the choice as to how they're going to participate.
Yeah, that's great. So that it's not always you have to do it this way, right? So even for me, giving you guys the option of passing if you don't feel like talking, I think that that's really important. And so the same sort of idea, but not exactly the same. Thanks, Adam. Caden, I noticed you popped in the chat, sort of giving opportunities to speak, coming up with plays. Is that what you mean? Like you let the kids design their own plays for basketball? That's great. Yeah. And then you run them, and then you see how they work, and they learn from that experience, right? It's a good way to learn. So, and then when officiating, asking your partner how you can support them. Thank you. Thanks for sharing that. And we started with Misha that round. So, Melanie, I'm wondering, did you want to jump in? Is there anything that you comes to mind for yourself around strengths-based actions?
I feel like a lot of things have been said already, and I really like the approach that Adam mentioned, but I'm not quite sure. I'm sitting here thinking what else I could add to it, and I can't think of anything more. Like, yeah.
And that's okay, that you're reinforcing the what everyone else has said by validating their point, so thank you. Casey has popped in the chat, frequent check-ins, and check-ins are really helpful, especially I think if you're working with older adults, you know, asking them how they're feeling, is it too difficult? And April's pointed out being careful with your words and describing instructions carefully and clearly. And I think that links to also what Quentin pointed out, which is, you know, sort of having boundaries and clear expectations, because especially if we're working with children, and adults need it too, right? We need to have a clear understanding of what's okay and what's not, and make sure that we try and explain things in ways that aren't overly complicated and that are broken down into smaller steps. So those are great examples of some strength-based actions. If you happen to have the slides open in front of you, there's also some strategies, and these might be broader things, and we won't necessarily go through all of these. But as I mentioned, to me, a strategy is bigger than action. It consists of a number of different actions, and it might be something that we need to actually take some training in, like conflict resolution or things like that. Safe sport would be another example. You know, there's actual training, coursework, things like that that you can do. And so slides 26 and 27 include a couple of examples. Last year, the targeted supports was introduced by somebody who works with youth in Hay River. So that was, I added that to the slide. So the zones of regulation, it's actually a framework that, from my understanding, is used in schools and also in other settings. How many of you guys, like I know you don't all have your cameras on, but maybe you can put a thumbs up. Has anyone heard of the zones of regulation before? No, Adam, you have your, yeah, so it's worthwhile looking at, and especially if you're working in community settings with children, to find out how they're learning or what guidance or what strategies are being used in schools. Because Adam, I don't know if if this makes sense to you from, you know, an educational perspective, but as a teacher, I think if you're using a certain strategy in your classroom, but it's also being used outside the classroom in a community setting, it's probably a lot easier than using different strategies. Would that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. The more the child's exposed to it, the more they're going to be able to use it. And I think there's probably some folks on the call that have small children, you know, the zones of regulation, that's very common to give them a way to describe how they're feeling when they don't necessarily have the vocabulary to do so, to just be able to say, you know, your kid comes home from school and says, you know, I'm feeling very red. And that means a lot to them, and it can convey a lot that they otherwise can't communicate. And if you don't mind, Carol, one other thing I just
go ahead.
There is there's one resource that it's very prescriptive in that it maybe gets into a little of that problem focus where if you know what challenges a participant is struggling with, it's called teachspeced.ca. Just type that in, you'll find it. And it's got very simple, very digestible strategies that a teacher, or in this case, a recreation leader, can also use for any number of challenges or difficulties that a child may face. And it doesn't focus on the problem, but it just gives you some very simple program accommodations and adaptations that might help that individual participate and succeed more. And it's the kind of thing I found extremely useful when teaching, that if you've only got a 5-minute break and you have one student in the class or one player on the team that's struggling with something, 5 minutes is more than enough time to pull this up, take a quick look, and you'll get, you know, here are 4 or 5 things you can try and apply them instantly. So it's a really valuable resource and one I come back to over and over again.
That's great. Would you mind popping that in the chat, Adam? That would be, because I did write it down, but I might not have quite written it down correctly. So resources like that, like the understanding sort of the zones of regulation, or what Adam just mentioned, or also what's on slide 27, which is targeted supports, different tools, can be really useful working, especially with children, but there's no reason why you can't use similar resources with youth and with adults. And just having those tools at your fingertips, as Adam mentioned, can really help make a difference in the moment. You know, if you're running a practice or something's happening after practice, or you've got, a program and in between from one time to the next, like Acacia posted about a hike and things like that. So, you know, those types of things can be very helpful. So take a look at that. I will share Adam's link as well. Often I put these sorts of things in the Explore More section, which is at the bottom of the learning event. So go ahead and check out that Explore More section so that you can come across other strategies that might be helpful for you. I'll let you explore those a little bit more because I just noticed that we've got about 2 minutes left. So I just wanted to skip ahead in my notes for today's call. And, you know, really, let's share things. So if you have any resources that are helpful for you, please do share them so that other people can access them as well. So you do have another required learning activity for this learning event. It's due on Sunday. So last Sunday you had one. The first one asked you to describe a situation and just what you observed in that situation and some of the factors that might have been underlying it. I didn't ask you to jump into solutions just yet. In the second week, you start to share some solutions. So your solutions might be actions, or they might be strategies. And if you're using something like the link that Adam just shared in your required learning activity or your RLA, please do share the reference or the link so that other people can take a look at that. So this is sort of a two-part thing. If you haven't done week one yet, the week one RLA, go ahead and do that one. And then it's almost like week two RLA is a response to your week one. And I'd like you to try and come up with 2 options that could have been used to improve the situation or that were. So if you had a something, a strategy or an action that was used to and did improve the situation, see if you can come up with a second one just to give you a few alternatives. And just describe what they are and how to apply each. If you have any questions, please reach out to me by email. I'm happy to get back to you. I'll be off sort of my phone until about April 25th, which is when we have our next conference call. I will be back at home for the next conference call. As you wrap up this learning event, please complete the short feedback form that's in activity number 7. And please do stay on the line if you have any questions, whether it's about this learning event or the last one. And I did extend the deadline for the last learning event, the required learning activities. So go back, and if you haven't finished that one yet, take a look at that too. So, Shawnee-san, that's thank you in Southern Tichonee. You guys can pop in thank you, goodbye in the language that you use in your area. And thanks for joining the call today. I appreciate your patience with me in a different location in a different time zone. And I'll talk to you next week. There's no conference call. So you get a break next week to catch up on everything. And then we just have two learning events left before it's break for summer. So is it Marcy? Is that how you sort of, Katie, you say, is it Marcy? Is that how I pronounce it? So kind of, yeah, that's great. Thank you. Thanks so much. Stay on the call if you have any questions, please. And we'll talk to you all in 2 weeks.